Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamond.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you, Robert?
Oh, I'm really good.
Yeah?
How are you?
What? Oh my God, you're asking me how I am.
Yes.
You're breaking the spell.
But how are you?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good. Yeah?
I'm feeling really great.
Are you high?
But are you feeling great?
You're feeling really great.
The reason I am so overjoyed today is twofold. One is...
Two-part.
We are being joined across the Atlantic, or whatever the ocean is.
It's the Atlantic, yeah.
That's handy.
It's the Thames.
I got it right. Yeah. Across the Thames and then the Atlantic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We are being joined by one of the funniest people in the world, in my opinion.
Yeah, me too.
And I think you agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
And all the way from Hollywood, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah, Hollywood. Let's say it's Hollywood anyway. Yeah. All the way from Hollywood. And the other reason is her Instagram has really cheered me up in lockdown. And there was a video of her doing just what I just did, which was like, I'm feeling great. How are you? And I just had to recreate it in a very poor way. But if you want to see the actual one, visit her Instagram because it's genius. Mm-hmm. And today's guest was my favourite character, sorry Russell, in Looking, which was the HBO series, and honestly, like, crazy in love with Doris.
I agree. This character was my favourite character in the show as well.
Total legend.
So far.
And the great thing about that show is I feel like it's getting better with age in a weird way. Like, I think the world is... Yeah, exactly. We're looking really great, aren't we?
Really hot.
Actually, my hairdresser today told me that I look like I'm 31 and I'm turning 40. And I was like, you are staying.
He's the hairdresser for cataracts.
He's the new hairdresser for life. Oh, my God. Anyway, so today's guest is an amazing actress, comedian, even though I thought you said comedian, but apparently women get called comediennes. I've never seen the word comedienne before. I was like, it's really cool.
Yeah.
So there's the word. I thought people were comedians.
It's so cool. It's so cool, Rob. You're right.
I can cut that bit out.
Don't cut it out. It's great.
Oh, my God. What are you talking about?
I didn't know. Anyway. Yes, this amazing woman is basically a performance artist, I think, and a visual artist themselves, and just very exciting. So please welcome to Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art, Lauren Weedman.
Oh my gosh, it's going to be such a letdown after all of that. That is...
Are you in Hollywood, Lauren? Where are you?
I'm not in Hollywood, but that's so glamorous. No, I'm in Santa Monica, which is, you know...
Oh, it's just, not far, though.
It's not far. It's not far. I didn't mean to be like, I'm not in Hollywood. I'm actually in Aspen. Yeah, like, I really have attitude about that. Like, actually, do a little research.
One of your videos recently was amazing. It's like you hiking through one of the kind of Californian trails, and you're like, look at all this beauty. And you're like, I'm not meaning to rub in all my success. It was like, you go, girl.
Oh, that's right.
I was in the hiking phase of the quarantine.
Mm. Big time.
Where I was, there's the art phase, and well, I could get to that. And yes. Then there's the hiking phase. Yeah, thanks for looking at my Instagram.
Oh, my God.
It matters to
no,
me.
It's amazing. Well, let's go straight on to the art. Well, let's talk about you, Lauren. And on your website, you have stated that you are a performance artist.
Sure, why not? what does it matter? Yeah, I may have said that. It's always that people are with the intro stuff, because I'm introduced everywhere I go, of course. Yeah. Every restaurant, like, how would you like to be introduced before you walk in? I'd like to be a comedic, comedian, performance artist, only because I don't know what to, because if I say artist, it seems like it's just visual sometimes for people or something, you know? Got they it. Immediately assume, you know, I don't know. I'm not really, I haven't really figured that out. I've got time.
You've got time, because there's an amazing sequence on there, which is the City of Eau Claire opening dance, which I found moving, magical, and genius. Ooh. I've written down.
Ooh.
And I found it, and it was part of a series that you were doing in different cities, right?
Yes. I had this idea that I was going to go to a city, and they're called the city shows, and I would go someplace, and then I would write a play. It was mostly improv, usually, but that would start from like the moment I got on the plane till I got on stage. And I was just going to experience whatever the city was and then, but then try to find a story, like figure, and always inserting myself. Like it was usually like, you know, I've just, like my husband just had sex with a babysitter. What is it going to be like in Boise? You know, like it's it's always like some kind of like what's going on with me in the city. But yes, and I was doing that because they were like quick, fun gigs. Cause yeah. I could travel and get out. And it was almost like being in your 20s again. Where you, well, for me at least, where someone's like, hey, man, I collect license plates. I'm like, no way, can I see them? And then you could go and not think, well, this looks, you know, if I did that now, it would look like I was, there's a drug problem or something. You know, if you do it with the show, it just was so fun to be able to take different people's, I could do anything. You know, I would go in the paper and find like, you know, if they were doing like, I don't know, corny stuff like meditating with horses or something like that.
Yeah.
All that kind of shit. So it was super,
and there was no rules. You didn't set any rules for yourself. You were like, I'm just going to go with my instincts here.
Yes. And the only rule was that I was not going to do what whoever booked me told me to do. Because a lot of times, like if a school would book me or a theater, they would be like, you've got to, first of all, you start at my Uncle Joe's because he's got stories about his track. Like anytime somebody was trying to tell me what to do, like who was a part of the, you know, the
crowbar into the business narrative. Part. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't want that. I was very like, you know, like, don't you tell me, I'm going to do what I instinctually want. And tonight I'm just going to look at bars, whatever. No, I mean, I was trying to make sure it was always like being connected to what I wanted to do.
How many cities did you do?
970. And I did that. And no, I've done like four. Six maybe. It's always like just, and it's also exploiting the fact, it's how I rehearsed for, I do solo theater stuff, which sounds as annoying as it is.
No.
And that's nice. Let's forgot. I'm not talking to, I'm not in LA because if you do solo theater, people are like, me too. mine's about like, no matter what it is, like mine is too. I'm adopted. And they're like, oh my God, this is, yeah. We're the same person.
Yeah.
But it was the same, the city, how I create a show is usually out of a lot of improv and just, and stories and talk, you know, I don't know. And if I find music or whatever, I would also put that in basically finding things, like the idea of just going out and just like, and whatever I find, I'm going to believe it has, even if I don't know why, mm-hmm. if it appeals to me, like even if it's an object, but mostly it's music or people, I will throw it in to the show.
But have you ever considered coming to London and doing one, or doing a city in Europe?
Oh, please do.
Yeah.
I'm so busy. I'm just so busy. No. Yeah, of course. Because it's all about who pays me, though. I'm kind of a whore like that.
Right.
It's about who sets up. Because people are always like, well, you should do, you know, have you ever thought, hey, you should come stay in our place in southern France. I'm like, that would be great. Can you get me there? So wonderful invitations. It's just a matter of getting, I'm not good with money. And the drug problem. I'm just kidding.
We definitely need to organize a one woman.
We need to get
show.
You to London to do that.
Would love
incredible
that.
Once everything's once we're all
definitely.
Out of lockdown and quarantine.
Let's
and
actually
stuff,
organize that, because that would be so
be
good.
That would be so. And I also my kid also needs a few surgeries, and I'm wondering if you could help with that too.
Yeah, sure.
Tell me, we'll talk afterwards. There's something about the way he runs that I don't like, and I just know if one little knee surgery and he'd mm-hmm. be perfect.
Yeah, amazing.
So I actually watched one of your stand-up kind of one-woman shows on YouTube, and I really connected with you on a big level, which is the idea that you didn't necessarily grow up loving being cuddled or that kind of thing where people hug it out and they're like, hey, how are you? And then give you a hug. I loved hearing you speak about that and holding hands and the whole thing. It's total genius.
Oh, it's hard. I think I'm getting better because I'm a mom. So you have to sort of like, love you, good night. You know what I mean? You have to, you know, open your heart
tradition,
a bit.
Tradition, yeah.
So it's not so, right. But it was for a long time where my joke was always, or people, when I would hug them, I would always pat them, like they're on fire or something, like on their back, pat, 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 pat. Like I would never just relax into somebody. Like I have so many, like my lesbian friends in Seattle who get very mad that I refer to them as my lesbian friends in Seattle. I'm like, but you are, right? You're lesbians, you're in Seattle. What else do you want to be?
That sounds like a new Vanessa movie title.
No.
Lesbians in Seattle?
Yeah, that's better.
That is a good one. Yeah. I'm going to write that down. they crawl up and they are the most physical. Like they can't, they're
lesbians
constantly holding hands.
Yeah,
yes,
right.
And just leaning on each other and just up. Everyone's like, I'll be in your uterus now. Or, no, you lay in my uterus. They're just so inside each other and so comfortable with that. And I'm always was the one who was like, I'm fine in this chair. They're like, well, there's room on the couch. And I'm like, no, I already sat down. Like, just so you mean you're not good with, like, I mean, in relationships, are you like,
Rob?
I'm fine if I'm in a relationship, but not with strangers. And I've actually just met a friend of Russell's recently in Margate called Jerry, and he's really like kind of huggy and tactile because he's a choreographer and been a dancer. So we went out the other night with his friends, and he's like it with them and everybody. He's just very sort of like huggy kind of person. I just freeze. I'm just like, I can't do it.
When do you stop holding hands with somebody you're not? When you're, you know, when like a friend holds your hand or somebody like grabs your hand, like and then you're sitting there with holding hands. Still,
exactly. It's like how long do you hold hands for?
Yes, where I'm like, I'm gonna let go now. I'm gonna itch my nose, or I'm gonna reach for something, or God, they're gonna think I let go. Or hope they don't think I don't. Yeah, it's very neurotic.
My God.
But yeah, I don't like it.
Do you see?
Now I'm getting used to not being touched. But go ahead.
Yeah. Do you see? Your comedy and comedy in general as an art form and spoken word. Do you feel like it's an art form?
Well, I got my degree in comedy as a. No, I'm just kidding. I was trying to think of something to say that was pretentious. No, in fact, even the comedy part for the longest time, like, and still, actually, when people are like, "I saw your," well, I'm not mad at you, Robert, because you can't do anything wrong.
Thank you.
Just because you're gay, I'm sorry to be so general. it's. When people would say stand up, I was like, stand up? Do I seem that needy? Like, am I that annoying? Like, and people constantly will think I'm doing, you know, like, that was my, when I lived in New York City, I remember the first job I got on The Daily Show. And I was like, am I funny enough to be on that show? And I went to a bodega to buy some gum or something. And the way I ordered it, the guy, whatever I said, which was, I'm sure, hilarious, he was like, you're a stand-up. And I remember thinking, like, God, I guess I just have it in me. I just am, there's a, but I don't understand what that, I've never crafted a comedy. Do you know what I mean? I've never put an act together for laughs.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Or I haven't thought, like, how people work on their stand-up act. And I've been in stand-up shows, but usually I just get up there and react to everything. Have a little anxiety attack and then get off stage. And then people are like, wow, that was raw. So I guess it's an art form, but I don't go comedy first. I always just think like, and bear with me, but truth first. I just think I want to be honest about stuff, you know? Mm. And of course, laughing is I just love laughing. The most annoying sentence ever. I was just trying to be annoying. I love laughter. And I like making my hands go real wide up in the sky, too. I don't know if it's an art form. It certainly helps connect with theater and stuff. Like, that was, no matter what, you can get into so many subjects if people trust you, if you can make them laugh. Right. And so that's been very helpful because I've never wanted to be only in comedy. That's why.
Yeah. So in a way, it's more like improvisation then or something. It's like a skill, isn't it? Like an acting skill, I guess.
I guess so. Yeah. I'm really bad at writing grants. And that's because of this problem right now. Because they're like, describe why you do. And I'm like, I don't know. What do you think?
Applying for grants. Oh, my God. Yeah. I can't.
Yeah. Describe your work.
Yeah,
a connection. Don't want to die alone. hate myself. I'll hate me more than you'll hate me. Look at me and good night. Like, I don't know how or always why I do things.
Sure.
Besides the connection.
Big other side of your life is making art. And in lockdown, you've really gone to town with incredible volume of paintings. Yeah. You've been painting like one a day.
Doesn't it seem like you know what? I've got to stop saying that. I find it, talking about the painting that I've been doing over like the last, like, I guess almost a year now that I've like started to be into it so much.
Yeah.
And I feel like painting almost like I do in talking about my son, where it's like, because I love them both so much, I get kind of like,
yeah, so what? Yeah, they're dumb. Don't worry about it. Stupid.
Like, it's so vulnerable to talk about almost.
Right.
And when
right.
people try to, I paint in my garage, and God forbid, like, someone will see me and be like, what's going on in there? You know, I've got an uncle who paints, and will come in and try to see what I'm doing. And then I watch them try to find a painting that they like, because I've got them all hung on the walls. So like, oh, I like, is that one yours? I'm like, no, that's my son's. Oh, okay. I like that one. I'm like, no, that's just a part of a bicycle that I'm painting. That's not a painting. And they're like, well, it's good for you. Good for you for painting. You know, so I hate when people come in to look at it. But yes, I've started painting.
But you like your own work. Like, you look at your own paintings.
Sometimes. I love doing it.
Yeah.
And some I'm really happy with, yeah. And I just so love the process. And I so love the starting with nothing and seeing what happens. Because I'm not a... I don't know how to draw. I don't know how to sketch or anything. I'm not trained. So I just, it's mostly about the paint and about like what, I always want something to appear. Like, it's like tea leaves or something. You know, it's a lot of just messing around with paint. And then all of a sudden I'll be like, oh my God, it's a chapel and it's the Dalai Lama come to like, it's, and then it's only that for 2 seconds and then it's something else. And I like to, yeah, mess with it until it's satisfying, I guess. And I was, and I've been doing, it started off going, I would go to the Goodwill, the, you know, thrift stores, and I would find these canvases that were like half done by people clearly had been, you know, took an art class or, you know, decided to take it up and didn't finish it. And then there'd be really just sort of awful kind of looking like child paintings and stuff. And I was like, I'm going to finish the conversation. I'm going to support that artist that didn't support themselves.
Wow.
And I'm going to continue on. Like, I was,
like
that's
gift.
How it first started.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to give to people. And so then I would give them away. I would do these cabaret shows, and I would give them away to people. And I'd force them to carry really large, like, they wouldn't want them. You can tell sometimes they were like, that's okay, can I get a book? And I'm like, listen, I need some room in my garage. Take this. And I make them take really large paintings I have to carry around all night with them and stuff.
And a lot of the more recent ones you've been making, the face seems to appear a lot. So you've had a lot of... are they actually like you, or who are
everyone
these people?
Listening should go on their Instagram now and look at this one is titled at this one is titled, and this is Lauren Weedman's
this
sister Instagram
titled.
Page which has all of the work. So as we're talking about this, you should pull them up and then you'll know what we're talking about. But yes, Rob was saying that they're very figurative these works,
and very colorful as well, joyful.
They are again, I felt When I put it on the Instagram, I did it at friends' urging, because I really was of the belief of like, I'm going to make these and I'm going to give them to people. Like, I'm just going to give them away. It seems bizarre. And I also had the voice. I have some pretty like snooty art friends, and who I love dearly. But they
are they lesbians one in point Seattle? Painting, as well, or not?
No, they're gays in London.
Lesbians in Seattle. Yeah, lesbians in C-Town. And they at one point, some of them, my friend George, there his name is out. George came to my garage and he was like, I talked about whether I should sell them. And I was like, hey, do you think I should ever sell any of these at like really low price, like at my shows? And he was like, I don't know if you want to cheapen your brand, like kind of stay in your lane. Like, you know what you do. And if you start to paint, like, then almost like fully do that or don't fully do it. And that's, then I was like, he's right. He's a good dresser. I trust him. And then I, since then, have sort of got rid of that voice in my head. And the portrait things I've been doing are kind of what my obsession has always been, because of you people. The museum in... is it there in London, the Portrait Museum? Is that still there?
National Portrait Museum, yeah. National Portrait Gallery.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I went there when I was like 23, when I was living in Amsterdam. And I,
oh, cool.
That museum, oh my God, William Blake's death mask was like, oh, fucking yeah. Like, yeah. Oh, so sexy. I loved that museum.
Was you there and by yourself? How did you stumble across the MPG?
Yeah, I was by myself.
Yeah.
So what?
No, I mean, like.
Yeah. Yeah, I was alone. You're like, what did you weigh back then? How'd you tip the scales then, Lauren? I was heavier. In fact, my whole time in London was me walking around covered in the crumbs of the biscuit crumbs, right? Because I'd never had English biscuits before. And so everywhere I went, I remember looking down at my winter coat and there were just crumbs all down the front of me. Because I was constantly like sticking a cookie in my mouth every time.
What biscuits were they?
They're delicious.
Can you remember what brand?
The hobnob stuff.
Oh, the chocolate hobnobs.
Oh my God,
hobnobs.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah. Yes, but I'd never had them.
Hobnobs.
Oh, and they're so crumbly. Like you take one bite and crumble down the front. And, but it was, but I loved that museum. And I was And because I was sort of analyzing it, thinking about being on the podcast, I was so excited I got to talk about it. And I was thinking about how, oh my God, it's so corny, but Van Gogh's face, when I was in the Van Gogh Museum and seeing his self-portraits, which
in
I know
Amsterdam,
are like.
In Amsterdam, this is, right?
Yes. And I know it's such a, you know, like buy a mug then, Lauren, if you're into Van Gogh. Like there's a lot of his work on there, but they really are so good. And that's what I wanted. That's not... That's a bit of it, I guess, of an influence. But I just love people's faces, and I always tend to always do that. Maybe because I thought it's because it was easy. I assume everything I do is because I'm lazy. I'm like, oh, you just do that because you're tired.
But isn't that what people sort of ignore the things that come easy to them because they think, oh, everyone can do this, and then you realize later on that no, that's your gift.
Yeah, exactly.
And it isn't easy for everyone else.
Yeah, that's what I need to write that down, dear Lauren. Remember.
I think we both learned that.
You sitting in a chair seems easy, but sorry, go ahead.
But you know what? Looking at your paintings, though, there's something really Tim Burton about them, and they also look like these kind of sewn or stitched fabric. Like the paint,
definitely.
The way you have these lines that go around them, it's like they're stitching or quilting going through these paintings. And I don't know if you've even realized that, but this line making that goes through them.
There's a texture, really, isn't there? Like
there's a
texture,
yeah. It makes me think of The Nightmare Before Christmas. You know, like the kind of costumes out of that and Jack the Pumpkin King. It's like you have these, that energy is going into these works. Are there any things like that influences?
That's really, well, I have a book of Tim Burton's, I have drawings by him.
Right.
In one book. I have a lot of him and David Lynch. I'm a big fan of his stuff too. I paint on the super, super, what's it called when you're tracing paper? Mm-hmm. So it's super thin. And I do layer and layer and wipe it off and wipe it off and wipe it off. In fact, and my son is always, he'll come in when I'm first starting to work sometimes and he'll be like, stop now, mama, stop now. Like, it was good. Don't do anything else. And then he'll come back later and he'll be like, oh, you just couldn't, you ruined it. And I'm like, you know what? I don't want to have a child and I don't want to. I mean, I have to. He's here. I get it. I see it through. I'm not going to lie. But I don't know. All these things. I got obsessed with the glossy, that gloss you can put, the stuff you add to paint to make it thinner and glossier and stuff.
Oh,
gel,
yeah.
I guess it is.
What's it called? No, Terps, is it? Or no?
Is
the thing
it?
Is, I don't know because I've never made art. I only love it.
You haven't?
Never drawn. I stopped at the age of 10 or something, or 11 or something.
From this podcast, you haven't had a moment of like, I think I'd like to like have some.
Oh, actually, during lockdown, we did Instagram Live, and I got forced into making some drawings, and I didn't know what I was doing. I just felt so helpless. I felt lost.
What did you make?
We drew pictures of like Madonna.
Oh,
I mean, it was really ludicrous and ridiculous, but mine were no way as good as what you know. You're actually an artist. I'm kind of embarrassed even talking about it.
I don't know. I feel like when I have people over because I. Like for my birthday and I don't call them anything cute, like it's sipping, whatever people do and they have art parties, and though I shouldn't make fun of that. Do you know what I'm talking about? When like
a private view of the exhibition or something.
No, of like, no, this is way less exciting. I meant like sometimes you like the housewives in Santa Monica will be like, oh yes, painting, like I'm gonna have a paint party. I hired someone to, you know, arrange it, and my friends are going to come over, and it's called a sip and paint, and we're going to sip wine and paint. And I'm like, I'm not fucking going to that.
I've never heard of that here. I mean, I want that to be happening here. That sounds so glamorous.
You're right. It sounds. Oh, really? To me, I was just like, you can.
Like, that's like
just,
death.
Oh, totally. With the Santa Monica, with these. Yeah. Anyway, bless their hearts. They're all good people getting so many procedures done. They're exhausted.
Mm-hmm. But they. So many paintings.
So many paintings on their face. But I have people over, when I have friends over who say they painted or been artists in their lives at any point or went to school for it, I'm like, well, let's paint. Like, let's just do something. And people get so stressed out by it. And I have this like, everybody can. We can all, it's in everybody, right? It's like dancing. It's like, it may not be exactly what it's supposed to look like, but you could just do it. Just trust. It's all, I mean, that's what I did. I just trusted that I just wanted to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I had a desire to, and then I had an artist friend who was like, don't take any classes. Just learn as you go.
Yeah, self-taught. You're an outsider artist, an outlier artist, art brute. You're part of that conversation, Lauren.
That's what my brother told me.
Yeah.
He was like, you got to Google that because that's what your art is. Yeah. You're outsider. And I was like, perfect. That's always where I've been.
Yeah, it's amazing.
But I didn't have time to Google it.
It's interesting, it's though, because, Lauren, you were talking about truth in acting, you know, and in performing as a performance artist. But I feel like your work's very authentic and it has a real genuine emotional connection that I get as a viewer. Yeah. There's a kind of intensity.
Well, there's a direct eye line as well. They're very confrontational and they look at you and they're not like shy. They're like not shy. The characters are never shy.
They're very emotional, aren't they, as well? They're kind of like charged.
Yeah.
I think that's the word.
That, you know, that Murray Bartlett, who was in Looking with us, you know, who played my friend, that he was like, well, yeah, we want to buy one of your paintings, but maybe one that's not so stressed. And he was like, when you do another series, and a couple of people were like, I don't know if I want that in my house. It's intense. Like, they look like they're, and I'm like, well, yeah, you know, there's a pandemic. And so I think I was, you know, somewhat, I was a little bit, yeah, on a tiny bit stressed out.
How often do you paint?
It depends on acting and stuff. If I'm not acting, I will do it. It's so perfect to do when you're, I don't know if I mentioned I'm adopted and a single mother. So there's that. I know. I just thought people are really, really stunned by the load I have to carry. I'm just kidding. So being alone here I'm not alone. My kid is here. I've tried to count him. And it's good because it's something I can do here, right? To create stuff. And because I was doing music for a while, but that was loud. So the painting, I would say I do it maybe 3 days a week, but if I get going, I would do it all. I wish I could do it all the time. Like, that would be
How long perfect. Does each painting take?
It depends. It was good for the series that I did that I started with for this one is titled was one a day. And that was just to keep me from obsessing a bit. Mm-hmm. And so going back, I was like, I'm just going to do them and just blah, blah, blah. And it just was and to sort of see what would develop, like what do I want to do? Mm-hmm. Like, do I have some sort of style on this or what is? And so that was, now I say they take me maybe 3 or 4 days, but again, it's how many hours I have. And truly it is about, well, I guess it's true for everybody. I'm like, you tell you get it just right. Like it's the process of it is so fun. That like wiping things off and that word wipe is gross, but like wiping something off and starting again or wiping off something to see what appeared underneath it. I find that to be so satisfying and calming.
I'm really into this idea of the process as well.
Scary.
And that somehow, oh my God, stop. You're making me laugh, Ross. I don't normally record looking at him and it's just too making
She's
me laugh.
She's totally fine, Lauren. Don't worry.
I really like this idea of the process as well.
I just had a loss. I didn't know what was about to happen. I just thought, this cannot happen today. Why is this happening to me? I'm sorry. I've been through a lot. Is it process? Yes.
Okay, I'm done.
Are you done? No, you're talking about the process.
I really like this idea of the process as well, because I was watching Grayson Perry's TV show, which somehow I missed during lockdown. He did.
Do you know
British...
Grayson Perry, Lauren?
No.
Oh, so
Grayson
Perry. Grayson
Perry.
Yeah, he's a. You do know him.
say it though. I said I do this all the time. I'm like, oh, absolutely. No, I don't.
He's a very well known British artist,
British potter,
and he makes pots. And he's really interested in outside
and
art.
And his style
well.
Is very out. He's on the inside. He's trained, but he has a self taught art brute outsider art element to his work.
And he made this amazing series during lockdown. Like I don't know how many times a week, but it's all about comedians and actors and different people, friends of his, coming in and making art for a day who don't normally make art. And it became very much about this idea of the process and that the making is the most important thing. Mm. Because as you were saying, some people get so terrified by just putting pen to paper, me included. Mm. But when you do it, how kind of healing it can be for mental health. And it was a program, you know, designed, it's very similar in a way to what you were doing with your brilliant kind of sharing of all your imagery during lockdown. Because yeah. I think it communicates and brings people hope. But at the same time, for you, it must be a great thing mentally to like free yourself up.
Yeah, it is. It's a, I so get locked down in the doing of it. Like I've gotten a lot out of listening to your guys' podcasts, those three I've listened to, but I love it. Four, I'd say, but I love it. It's still my favorite. But that sounded so not how I meant to sound. I was anyway. What all of a sudden I'm like, I have to go. Okay. Oh, she had an anxiety attack on the show. Just click. But I'm not good about, I'm always have a hard time talking about how I do things. And I guess I just so enjoy the doing of it that, and I remember being at this McDowell Arts Colony, kind of really wonderful, like this place in New Hampshire where artists go to work. You know, they get fellowships to go there, and it's very prestigious and fantastic. And I was the only one from LA, and the way
you got
talk
a fellowship
at the
to go
table,
there, they invited you there and paid for
I
you.
I did, but I won it because I would have never applied myself. I just would never have thought to do that. And I won an award for this solo show I did about working in like the LA County jails, and so the award was a fellowship. And when I went there, everybody was so kind of, they weren't awful to me, but there was a lot of talk about Lauren's from LA. Anyway, and I mispronounced a word the first night at the dinner table. I said, I can't remember. It was like, I said chafing or chafing wrong. I was like, somebody said they rode their bike a lot that day. And I was like, you must be so chafed or shaved. Mm-hmm. What is it? What do you
chafing,
guys say?
Yeah. Chafed.
Chafed.
Chafing, right. Yeah. I must have said chafed. Mm-hmm. Something that was like so dumb, and the whole table, like all these Pulitzer Prize winning, you know, opera, say all, everyone was like, boom, like the table went, and I was like, did I just mispronounce a word at this very incredible table of great minds and bright people? And they were like, she's from LA. And I was talking about TV at one point, which made me even more like, you know, like, ugh, the dumb at the end, and at the end of the table. And but then when they saw my show, because we had to share what we were working on and, you know, show off to each other and stuff. And after that, suddenly everybody was, I was, you know, got to sit at the cool table. But I don't know how to talk about it. You know what I mean? I wasn't able to.
But this was art that you'd made that you were showing them.
Yes. Wow. Yes. Not visual art. It was a solo show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was a solo show. But just the way that they, I just realized because I didn't go to school for this, that I was, a lot of them were from academia and I'm not. And so as I'm like, you know, telling stories about, oh, I had a threesome in Amsterdam and then I shit my pants. Anyway, I'm an artist. And they're like, oh, okay. Like it doesn't, like, you don't come across this one. So that part, I don't know what my point is, but I guess what just talking about it, I'm always like, oh, my problem.
Well, it's the fact that your talent was the thing, is the thing that gets you through.
That's your way of communicating. Yeah. So you don't need to over-intellectualize it or verbalize
it. You don't need to impress people.
And in a way, that's the most important thing, Lauren, surely, is show people the work and let the work do the talking. Thank you.
That's kind of how I feel, yet I get so comforted listening to artists talk about their process. I love it. Mm. Yeah. So I'm uncomfortable with it, I guess, but I truly do. I mean, God, show me a documentary about an artist and I love it. I just want to hear how they're doing. Oh, please suffer a little. So I'm not against it or anything. And but yes, it's very calming.
Yeah. When did art come into your life? Like, did you start making art when you were younger? Like in your childhood or something? Or did it come to you later?
No. I've always been more music and writing. And then the painting truly came from being a single mom and feeling like I have to make something. Like I, there are days when if I go do a job, if it's a guest spot on TV or something, if I go more than 2 days not having made something, and I don't cook, so I can't be like, oh, just, that's where I unwind is in the kitchen. Like I don't have that. I feel not right. And if I can just have my own burst of getting out whatever, I don't know,
creativity.
I'm happy. And so that's where the, and I know it's so basic, but man, it's I'm like, as work has started to happen a little bit, which I'm so glad for, of course, but also it's like, oh, damn it, I was really going to try to paint hands today, you know, so it's getting in the way of my...
Do you think you're going to raise your prices soon? Because on... At This One Is Titled, you're selling your paintings, originals by Lauren Wheaton, $200
each. $200
each.
Yes.
They are a
steal.
This
is another issue. Yes. This is, well, it's for my documentary, After I Die, when they're like, and she only sold them for $200.
or gave them away at gigs.
And gave them away, exactly. She paid people to, I had the same, this comes up all the time. I have friends who are like, why are you selling them for that? I'm like, because I want, well, this is why. Like, I had two people reach out to me who really liked some of the paintings. And one of them is she's a preschool teacher who lives in Seattle. And she, big loves. She was like, I love that. She had such a strong reaction to it. And she asked, she goes, what are the prices? And I hadn't priced them yet. And when I told her, I think I said like 400, and I felt like just mired in guilt because I just wish I could give them to people. And I was like, it's like 400. And she was like, oh, shoot. But, you know, not right now, but maybe next time. Let me know. I just love them. And that's all it took. And I was like, you'll be receiving a painting by the end of today. And aww. I'm going to build you a library. But like, if anybody wants it and money's an issue, that I'm not good with that. And that's why it's so great in acting, right? To have a manager or agent to deal with that. Because I'm immediately like giving it away. So maybe I'll raise my prices.
I think you should.
I have another round of paintings I'm going to put up, but I just feel weird to
charge. You know, there's some artists who do kind of like parts of their work, which they always keep at a certain price. What's his name? Noel, he shows with...
McKenna?
Noel McKenna, exactly.
Australian.
Yes. Yeah. So Noel McKenna does these tiles, ceramic tiles, which are really beautifully painted. I'll put some on the Instagram when we put this episode out. And he sells them, I think, always for €500, and he never puts the price up. So they forever, even those paintings...
have access to them.
Yeah, exactly. To allow people to always have access, whereas the paintings might sell for £10,000 or even more, £20,000. Yeah. But he actually has deliberately done that. And I think that's so cool because, like you say, there's so many people out there who want to connect with the work and actually live with it. So I think you should still have some at $200 though, because it's great. I mean, it's brilliant.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I just like the idea of, all I know is that if you think about, even like those like TV, right? Like the first season of a show and where nobody's got money and we're all just making money for the first time and everybody's so dear and so happy to be there. And then as soon, like then second season comes in and people come back and they've got like new teeth and they've got like, you know, better pants on and then suddenly they're starting to create a lifestyle they have to keep, you know, they start taking jobs to be able to pay the mortgage, right? Or to keep up to pay their bills. Mm. And I just never wanted to get to the point of creating something and thinking about money behind it. yeah. just stops my, I just can't. I just like, boop. That's my losing my erection noise. Boop.
That's the noise it makes.
And I know it's more of like a thump or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. I can't just. It's louder than that. Yeah. It's been so long since I've seen that. Like not because.
Really, it's a really bassy, bassy
oh
knock.
My God. Stop. Oh my God. It's a bit knock. Like Searching for Sugar Man. I just saw that film for the first time, Searching for Sugar, Sugar Man, who was the guy who was famous in South Africa, but no one had told him. And then.
He's a songwriter.
Yeah, the songwriter.
And his songs were making loads of money, but they didn't tell him.
Well, making millions by the sounds of it.
He was a postman. What was his job?
No, he was working on like construction, building sites. Yeah. And then even when he found out and he went on this big tour in South Africa, he actually just gave all the money to his family and didn't take any of the money himself and has just maintained his very frugal, wonderful, happy existence. Mm. And it's a really good message. I mean, I respect
it. It is a good message. I don't mean to sound also like I'm not. Here's the other thing is that it's also about I'm alone all the time. Like I'm so, you know, more isolated, of course, than normal. And I'm, because I'm on my own, if I had a partner, if I was around friends who were like, okay, you're like, the fact I even got the Instagram going was because of one person who came over and was like, you need to get what are you doing? And just told me what to do. And I was like, okay, I'll do everything she said. And so because I don't have any influences, you know what I mean? I don't talk to people about it so much. Mm. And LA is not necessarily a hotbed it is actually of amazing art. I'm just not around them. Like I'm in Santa Monica with my son, right? Sending him to school, now take him through school. So I don't have the influences, I guess, of people going like, yes, you should, or, you know, or sort of, it's always good to have one champion in your life, right? Who's telling you like, you are a good dancer.
Well,
you get out
champion.
There, Molly.
Well, we love you.
We're your champion.
We love what
we're
doing.
Oh, I don't mean. Do you guys feel sorry for me now?
Was No, I don't have anybody. No one believes in me, and I'm going to charge $50.
I'm going to pay
I'm
them.
So depressed. Yeah. Oh, I just realized that's how I sound like, and I'm dumb. Like you're very. This is what's going to happen after this podcast. I'm going to get like you're very self-deprecating. Stop it. You're very pretty in that golden light.
That's why I wanted to talk to you. Obviously, we became. Work colleagues and friends from looking
best friends
and yes you are my favorite character in it, and I was always gutted that I think we had like two scenes together, which was a passing line at one point, and I was always very upset about that.
I know the other guys got way more Doris time.
Murray, well, they were
Groff
best friends. Jonathan Groff. Well, everyone, I was the outsider,
time.
Kind of circling around. So,
you were the outlier then.
Totally. I was the outlier then. But
oh, totally.
Like,
yeah, and then
I
Russell would get dropped off by his car service, and we'd be like, "Here he comes, everybody."
There's that English actor.
I would be pushing Andrew Haig and Michael Lannan just to put scenes in with Kevin and Doris, but it never really happened. But I think I don't think we've ever properly broken down. I think I've DM'd you about it, but I think in that show. And our show, looking, you're just so magnificent and
thank you,
and just beyond. Mm-hmm. And I feel like now people are still discovering it. And I feel like now, if that show come out, it would have had a different reaction now because people are ready for that. When we brought it out, we were so ahead of the game, and people just weren't open to it,
which is so crazy, isn't it? So weird to think like it was like eight years ago. Yes, I that show mattered to me, and so I think that was the problem. Like, never love, because it'll be taken away again. So negative, but it was, first of all, to be acting with just having nothing but gay men around, a few straight ones, but whatever. It was so that is a really like a warm bath of just like, oh, thank you, I can, and not to deal. There was no, usually there's one crazy person, right? On every there's one person that you're like, oh God, here comes. And we really, there's one person, but was a really nice environment to work. And it was just and there was no pressure on me. Like nobody was focused on me that much because it was all about the boys. I felt like I could just be completely myself. And it was so, it let me improv so much. Mm-hmm.
You were very, very natural in it. And I said to Russell tonight before we did it, like, every time you come on screen, for me, you light up the screen. Like, you have a star quality that is rare. Like, not every actor has that. Like, even great actors don't have it. And I think you definitely have it. And the funniest thing is, recently when you've been doing Instagram, I know you don't post all the time to Lauren Weedman, but you occasionally post your videos of you driving in the car. Mm. I just think you light up the screen. Mm. Like, I love watching you.
That's
like,
true.
And I really want to see you more in things because I just, you're brilliant.
That's
so anyway, that's my little fanboy
so
gay moment.
Thank you. I appreciate, I do get the, I maybe I should maybe not get so, like, this should not be maybe be like my total identity is about. Like, people are always like, you don't get, why don't I see you more? Like, it's always, people don't always know me, right? So when I go into work as well, it's always sort of a like outsider underdog. They're always surprised, like, well, that was really good. Or like, well, that was really odd. Like, they're always so, I haven't done a ton since, I mean, I've done a lot of little guest stars, but I never, it's been rare to find that kind of part for a female, actually. Actually, it was a really, oh, whatever. And I loved it so much. Just all the things I care about so much are any gay story. I just, anyway, gay shit. I love gay shit.
All right. Same, but it was just improv-y, wasn't it? And there was such a joy amongst us all. And as you were saying,
yes,
it mattered. And it was one of them shows that, one of my favorite shows I've ever worked on, where I was just like, this, I care about this so much. I'm so committed to this. And if they were like, we want to sign you up for 10 years, I'd have been like, sign me up for 20, because I can't imagine not wanting to be around these people and telling these stories.
Oh, yeah, that's how I felt too. And I was... yeah, it was, the other thing was, I hadn't been, the director, Andrew, he wasn't director every time, obviously, or maybe not obviously, but he was so, they don't always treat women on sets, that there's, it truly is a thing with actresses that if it's not about someone wanting to have sex with you, you know, if you're not like a focus that way, then you're like, I'm a disgusting blob who's going to touch you. And people are like, ugh, she touched me. Like, that's going to be my bit or whatever. And this was just to be able to be a full person. And he gave me so much. He trusted everybody. He loved everybody so much. And was such a good, anyway, it was a really, now I was depressed about it being gone. And now I'm at that old lady place of like, well, I'm glad it happened. Like,
it
was a part of it.
Exactly. But it's still out there. I mean, over in the States, it's on HBO Go. Over here in the UK, it's on Now TV, Sky Atlantic. So it's there and people are discovering it.
Well, I feel more and more and more. Like, over the last few years, every time I say I do a podcast and I do it with Russell, they always go, oh my God, I've just discovered Looking. And it genuinely does seem to be...
And we had two seasons and a movie, but people are finding it and binging it.
Yeah, and it's so
and
worth
then getting,
doing.
Like, furious that that's it.
I know, but I don't know if it is it. I wonder if it will come back. Because the thing about it is, you are all adults in it. It's not like you're all like 14 years old in it. You're adults. So in a way, you can bring it back and you can just be a bit further on in your lives. Do you know what I mean?
Like,
I would love that. I mean, please let that happen. Be so cool.
I just remember the very last scene we did. I remember that for the movie, how Andrew was like, when he said it was a wrap, he came in and he was like, that's it, Looking's over, like, we're done. Like, that was, this is the very last, and he said it was such a, and normally they never do that. They're always like, well, you never know. I talked to somebody who thinks it's going to be a Christmas special. Like, they never can give you just the final, like, it's over, you know. They have to, you know, blow a little smoke of it. But so I, but yeah, maybe. But Russell, you get, do people know it in over in your land?
Yeah, so it was on, Sky here, which is and like a cable channel, and then Sky, it's on Now TV, which is an app here now. So it's, so everybody listening, you can binge it and watch it. But it was, I don't know, it just didn't get, you know, that's the reason it didn't continue, I guess. It didn't get the audience figures which they were hoping for. But
people are so divided about it. I get people also, I just worked on a show actually where the creator was like, the room will get divided, like, you know, two gay writers and then like an actor both like fighting about, like, you know, I just thought it was so boring. Like, nothing happened. And then somebody else like, how could you believe that? I feel like it was so completely real. That was, it was so like, but do you, I mean, people are usually really, or they get upset because they didn't see themselves represented on the show.
Yeah.
Because do you remember, like, we go to panels.
The gay blogosphere went crazy on it, didn't they? And they were just like, were like, it's boring and it isn't us and where am I? And then, and that was the pilot. And then suddenly everyone had sort of made a decision. I remember walking around San Francisco and people are saying, are you working here? And I'm like, yeah, I'm doing Looking. They're like, oh, yeah, I've heard that's boring. And I'm like, have you seen it? No. I'm like, oh, okay, but the zeitgeist is it's boring. Okay.
Yeah,
cool.
It's amazing how important that kind of thing is.
Yeah, word of mouth just was a bit like a few of the really powerful voices in blog world just took it down and then they sort of were the consensus for it. And then when people were behind it, suddenly went, oh, no, this show is fucking great. It was like, well, it's a bit late now. Because everyone's sort of, you've shit all over it a bit.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I'm super proud of the show. I thought it was all
too.
Really, and now watching Jonathan Groff.
Oh my God.
And his, like, I know, right?
Mm-hmm. He's so good. Oh my God, he's so good in Mindhunter. He's brilliant.
Oh, I've only seen a couple episodes of that.
Oh, you need to keep watching, because honestly, it's just he's next level in that. There's another thing that I really bonded with you about, which is your love of Van Gogh, but also, or Van Gogh, as some American friends of mine.
As Lauren was actually saying.
Okay. Yeah, because I think I say Van Gogh, but I think it's actually, isn't it Van Gogh or something? I think we're all saying it wrong.
Well, in Holland, it's Van Gogh.
We've got it.
The thing that I really connected with you was A, on that, and also Willem Dafoe, which is like Van Gogh, because you did a wonderful picture of him stood with two Van Goghs, and I was like, I love that. I love Willem
Dafoe. Yeah, my favorite men in all in one room.
Exactly.
Him and Van Gogh. Yes. I love any sort of like complicated, deep, like when I lived in Amsterdam, I did a bunch of experimental theater stuff, just weird, like awesome, like, and with actors like Willem Dafoe, not of that caliber, but like just people with those, that kind of face, that intensity. And like, do you mean you like him like as an actor, or you think he's hot or something?
I like him as an actor, but he was also like my teen crush, because he was in a few movies and I had like a proper crush on him. I just thought he was so handsome, and I also had a bit of a crush on Daniel Day-Lewis. Yes, totally.
Not for me.
How
did you come to Van Gogh then? How did that Van Gogh? Yeah, exactly. Van Ho. When did Van Ho first enter your life?
We can't talk about it if we don't get it right. It's really, it's hard to focus. It was because of what was it? I just remember I was reading a biography of his life. I think it was the big, I forget who wrote it, but it's a big one. This is back in like almost 1990, and then I met a Dutch guy, this director. At university, and I just remember being like, oh my God, I met this Dutch guy, and I'm telling him like, I'm reading a biography about Van Gogh, and I use that as a reason of like, we should be together, and then we were. But I moved to Amsterdam like in the same year that I had read that biography, and then I learned Dutch a bit by reading. It was really hard though, because it's not easy Dutch necessarily, but I'd read some of his letters in Dutch and then try to translate them, like when I was trying to teach myself. Mm-hmm. So I full on jumped into the, I guess always a bit isolated. Like I've always been a bit outsidery, and there is something about, and I know it's been, you know, because I've had arguments with friends who are like, I have a musician friend who's like, you don't have to suffer to make art, and I'm like, well, if you want to make good art. if you want to be honest about it, like just the human experience is pretty messy business as far as I like. And I just loved I love the suicide stuff and the begging for money and, you know, and being all alone. And I just love it.
Have you read the book and the portrait of Dr. Gachet, which was, which is a portrait he did of his doctor. And then after he died, basically there's this story that's told through the narrative and the journey that this painting takes post-death, where the collections go, who it goes to, what it was sold for, and then by the end, how much it sold for at auction and what it is now. And you've basically track his life through, post his death, through this painting of Dr. Keshet. It's an amazing book.
That sounds great.
It's brilliant.
Amazing.
Because his sister...
Could you come read it to me?
Yeah. His brother's wife took over his estate and looked after all of his paintings and kept them safe. And if it wasn't for her, in the same way that I think Lee Krasner was Jackson Pollock's kind of big champion, if it wasn't for her, then none of us would have heard of Van Gogh ever, because he never sold a painting in his lifetime.
That's interesting. Having a champion, that's what, like, when I've been, I don't think about it as much as I, when I was first single, I was like, I would, you know, definitely was not wanting to be single. And now that I've gotten used to it, which is that scary thing I've seen other people, when there's like, I just can't imagine being with somebody, like, I like to have my, you know, I always put my toothpaste there, and I couldn't imagine somebody moving it. Like, now I'm a little bit like that, which is scary. But to not have some, I just feel like in order to get, to put yourself out there, if you are an artist and art, it's, you need somebody there to help you. You know, you need, and my ex-husband was pretty good about that. He was really supportive and definitely, you know, like, you're my biggest fan, but also a big fan of The Babysitter. So it was complicated. Right. But
didn't you write a book about all of that?
I didn't write a full book. It was just a chapter. Okay. It was like an essay, like comedic essays about my life, and one of them was about the affair. Oh, yeah, and then, but then when I was promoting the book, it was always like, so, you know, your husband fucked the nanny. What did you do? What was she wearing when she came over? We can talk about something else later, but just want to get this out real quick.
Oh my God.
And it would become like the whole interview would be like, but yeah, but that was super good material. He handed me amazing material.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have to say, which is super nice. you know, what I was thinking about the Portrait Museum, sorry, and I'll shut up.
No.
The same trip that I went to the Portrait Museum, I saw my first art exhibit that I'd seen art in museums. I'd never gone to see an exhibit of one artist, and it was Edvard Munch.
Yeah.
Munch?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Another.
And I had never seen, I only knew the screen, right? But I had never seen his work, and I crying and crying.
Really?
It's super intense. It's a lot of like by the deathbed, you know, like girl alone staring at you in a forest in the dark with long hair. but that kind of, I loved that. That definitely.
Well, that energy is in your painting.
Totally. I was just about to say that.
See that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Now you said that.
I know.
And the color palette of Van Ho, Gogh, and Munch is in, you know, there's definitely a combination of those two art heroes of yours are channeled into your work now.
And also there's a few of the works which have like Van Gogh appearing almost sometimes. Like I sometimes think I see his face. And then also Frida Kahlo. I think there's one who's another great artist who's got an amazing life story.
Oh, yeah, right. I know. Sometimes I would reject... Like, I remember, loving Frida Kahlo, and then because everybody, you know, had her stuff or was, like, so into her when I was in college.
Yeah, yeah,
I was
yeah.
like, oh, yeah, she's all right if you like. but, no, I love her. I also...
Yeah.
And I also... I was just looking at Noel... who's the
Fielding? Well, you Fielding. Two have the same sort of dialogue. I think we should get a show of his paintings and your paintings.
Oh my God,
together,
that would be so
and
cool!
And you should do like a talk on stage because I think you and Noel Fielding would be such an incredible couple to show together.
That's what I just went and that's what, one of the things I love about your podcast is that I always end up, you know, I go look at people's work, right? And I've been introduced to people I didn't know. And his work, I thought the same thing. I was like, oh, that's somewhat similar. Mm-hmm. There's I'm like, I'm curious of his influences. I should listen to the whole thing. And I was listening to the podcast in the car with my son and I go, you know who this is? I go, it's the guy who hosts the British baking show. Mm-hmm. And my son is 10. He's like, listens for a little bit. And then he goes, yeah, I don't think on the baking show they are really allowed to show their personality. So, yeah, I like him. Like, because he didn't come across on the baking show as the person he sounded at all on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
Did I just bash the baking show? Is that kind of sacred for you guys?
No, not at all.
Because I love that show.
National treasure. No, totally.
Yeah,
no,
you guys are like, this is
really
uncomfortable.
No, because that's the trouble, though, with mainstream TV, isn't it?
To present and be a baking thing. This is his passion. But like, in the same way that you've channeled energies into art without being trained, he's done exactly the same. And for him, it's a compulsive thing that he has to make this work. He has a little studio and and he doesn't care. Like he said that when he makes them, he just doesn't give a fuck about them and he gives them away. Basically he sells them, gives them away and he doesn't even think about them. But then how do you feel about them? Do you have like, oh, I wish I kept that one back or I don't want to sell this one? Or are you quite like, I've done
that
now?
The only one that I regret, not regret, but I have like, is, and I guess I could go steal it back. I gave my manager this one. I found a dog painting that somebody had done and it was a really quirky, weird, like a bad poodle, and it was a pretty bad painting, and I found it and then I sort of covered it up and did some other things to it, and then I titled it, I wrote on there, Tell Me Everything, and it really looks like this poodle. You have to see it. It's kind of kitschy, but it's also you don't have to see it, it's not required.
No, please send it to us, we'll post it.
But I really, when I got done with it, I was so entertained by it, and you know, it's so like when you're enjoying your own stuff, it's so, for me, it's rare because I'm usually pretty critical. And I was like, this is awesome. And I gave it to my manager out of some weird guilt of like, I haven't booked for a long time. I should give her something. And I could tell she wasn't that into it. She was like, oh, fun. And I was like, oh, damn it. Why did I? And then she'd say to me like, just so you know, like so-and-so, they liked it. They came in, I saw your painting, they liked it. And I could tell that she's like, oh God, I got to hang it up. My client gave it to me. You know, now Lauren's painting. What's next? You can take ballet. Are you a ballet dancer now, Lauren? So that one, because only because I think, did she love it?
Yeah.
Like, did she really want it and love it? Because I don't want her to, you know. And I always tell people too, when I've given them, I go, do not feel bad for a second about giving it away. Like, don't feel like, oh God, Lauren gave it to me. I better like keep it in case she comes over. Like, for sure, just give it to somebody else. Do not, I have no attachment like that. I was only selling them too for a while, just for, I was like, I got to make some rent. That's when I started to sell them during the pandemic, you know, just for my surgeries.
Are you missing theatre? Are you fearful for...
Totally, aren't you?
Yeah, God, yeah. When they've announced that Broadway's not opening until like June 21 at least, it's just... And I was doing a play before lockdown. We'd just done 8 previews and it got cancelled on Broadway. And it was like... It's just like, fuck, what the hell are we going to... What the hell's going to happen? I mean...
I know. It's going to come back. I'm feeling this... It's funny because right before the lockdown, I was like, I'm not going to come out and perform for old white men in the front row who just spend the entire show looking at their hands the whole time. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like, I look out in the audience and see people like staring. It's always older white men who like come to the theater to nap. It's like a planned nap time. Mm-hmm. I was getting so starting to get tired of performing. And now that it's been taken away from me, I'm like, I will never, ever treat it poorly again. I so miss it. I can't wait to get... back
people in sleeping
in front of and get some people in the room. They're going to find ways to do it, right?
They've got to. I mean, everyone's like, I think that's the thing about artists is that we adapt and nobody sits around and waits for it to blow over and goes back to what they had before. Everyone's like, okay, right, so what do we do now? How do we do this now? And like, what you're doing, exciting, making these paintings and stuff, if we hadn't had the, you know, the pandemic, then there's some art that's coming out and you're channeling something, some greatness that you might not have had the opportunity to do.
Totally. And I'm also, yes, that is true. And I'm a fan of things falling apart. And I'm not saying I'm a fan of anybody who's lost, you know, like, oh, you're a fan of, I lost my father. I'm like, yeah, I'm a fan of that. That's right. No, I'm not saying that. But I am a big fan of like, okay, so this happened. Instead of trying to like, you know, no, everything's fine. We're going to like, you know, make it how it was. Like, is to let things, you know, change.
Evolve and change.
That's the only real thing. I love that shit. It's really all there.
Do you see art as therapy?
I think it's all, I guess, therapy a bit, right? Art a little bit. Because when people ask me about the solo shows, they're always like, is it like therapy for you? And I'm like, well, I don't know. It depends what therapist you go to, I guess. It's all personal. And yes,
I was
going to
say though, but
a
lot of the things I've seen you do are very personal. And you talk about being adopted and you talk about,
that's
you know,
all I have. Yeah.
All of these issues. But yeah.
Yeah, I feel like there's nothing else to. I don't know how to make stuff up, and right. the just the idea of being a person is just so like, oh my God, okay, so this is happening. Like, I want to figure it's to examine it. Seems like I don't know. I've my focus has always been like why I had a kid. Basically, it was like I want to watch a person figure out being a person, and then I forgot about like, oh God, I have to tell them about 9/11. Well, I'll do that real quick over dinner. And then I'll get back to watching him evolve as a person. Mm-hmm. But I do love the, like, I used to read Carl Jung when I was younger, not like, yeah, just volumes of his early work when I was nine. because I just love the idea of watching yourself, there's the self-absorption of it all, I guess, but it's also just like, oh, wow, like, this is what happens. Like, I feel like I'm a mouse, so they're like, okay, so if I get, you know, if someone taps me on the head for a whole day, how does that, you know, what happens to that mouse the next day? Like, just to see what happens to the brain, and it's also fascinating.
Mm-hmm. So have you been writing as well, because you're an award-winning playwright and you've had
award-winning
you've had many
many
you're like an author and a theater artist, and yes, you're a playwright. Have you been finding any ways to create new shows?
Yes, a bit. I have a show that I was working on right before the I was supposed to do it in LA
with the Arts Commission from Santa Monica. Was it that one?
No, that's a newer one. Oh, okay. That's that commission stuff was to help the show. Yeah, no, you're right. It was that.
All right.
Jeez, I'm, again, not a real listener. I'm like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. It's hard to create. I can come up with the ideas and all and do stuff, but I need to have another person. Like, I need my director. I need somebody to help. You know, bounce ideas off and stuff. So I always have a show going. There's always a solo show that's either halfway done, and I always have something. And then before I can get into a theater, I'll keep doing, I guess, painting and stuff to get by. But yeah, and I think I'm gonna do it on Zoom.
Oh yeah,
I think
wow.
A Zoom play, right? That seems like a thing to do.
Yeah, amazing.
Robert?
Did you just do Zoom play?
Yeah, Robert.
That, did right. you?
Yeah, no, I've done.
No, I didn't.
Play reading.
I definitely didn't do a Zoom play.
I did a play like a book read, like a play reading. Yeah, with all of us doing it, recorded it. Yeah, called The Understudy.
That's right.
Play reading, like you had the scripts in front of you.
Yeah, but we recorded it, so it went out. It was like an audio radio play, but they put it out in two parts, a week apart, and it was like a theatrical event. And it had like Stephen Fry was narrating it,
and Sarah Hadlam was in it.
Sarah Hadlam was it. So it was really it was like right at the start of lockdown. So it felt like again like how artists are trying to still keep, you know, exploring and coming up with stuff and keeping it fresh. And that felt like exciting. So yeah, absolutely, I think you should be doing that.
Yeah, I love watching some of those. And I've done a bunch of like storytelling stuff, and you know, on Zoom, a couple of Zoom performance stuff. That moment when you shut it off, like when you're doing it, it's great. You're in the moment of like, and then you're like, well, that's over, leave the meeting. And then you're like, phoonk.
Yeah.
And you're alone. And that moment is so, like, I tell people when I've been teaching, I'm like, just get ready, when I'm helping them with performance stuff, I'm like, get ready for the moment of end of meeting. Because it really, you hear this like, that's Suicide Watch 2020. Like, I mean, it's not that bad, but I mean, mm-hmm. the loneliness that you can feel yeah. when you're like, when it's all gone.
Yeah, it's like a big sort of withdrawal, isn't it? Yeah.
Is everybody sad?
No.
We can never be sad talking to you.
We ask every guest two questions.
Oh.
One is, if you could do an art heist and take home any artwork from a museum or someone's house or anything
from
you
your
like.
Manager.
It could be or your manager.
or if you want to steal from some lesbians.
And
in
it could be as big as you like. It could be giant or it could be tiny. What artwork would you take home?
Have you had people who only said their own work? Like, I would take all of my work back.
No one's ever said that.
That would be so awesome. Just something to, you know, to masturbate to. Yeah. I have it, and I don't remember what it was called, and I don't know why it's still in. I guess I'm too nervous to think about having a Van Gogh. I don't think I want one in my home. It doesn't seem right.
You didn't think
if I and this thing I have, I can show it to other people, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I don't want that. Okay, good. I don't want to be greedy. I think I've really shown how very humble I am. You know Laura Owens?
Yes.
She does this. I saw this piece at the Whitney. This is a while ago.
Yeah.
I remember that Whitney trip so well because every time my friend Dan would take my picture, he'd be like, put your teeth away because I have an overbite when I smile. And he's like, let's do a photo but put the teeth back. And I'm like, oh my God. Ugh, gay men. but the other thing about that trip besides me, put your teeth away, is Laura Owens says is one of a horse. It's just a big, and just the scope of it and the colors of it. And I wish I knew it was called, but her work, all of her work, I was one of those like, oh, that's an option. Mm. You can do work.
I loved the show.
I like the room where you could stand on one side and then it would be all panels. And as you moved around, they would all form the picture of one image. But there was like nine panels or something going across the room. Do you remember that?
Oh, I remember that, but I don't remember the image. Oh, pot smoking.
Well, it was
real.
More. Yeah. it's typical. Laura Owens mark making in it, and there was text in there as well in that sort of Photoshop style she has. But if you stood at a certain section, it would all line up, and you'd be able to read the message. I remember that was quite impressive.
Genius. I also like the writing. I like when there's text on stuff too, which is it's so basic, but I love not basic. Basquiat. Maybe I would take.
But that again, Basquiat is in your work, as it is Noel Fielding's. It's a major influence on his work.
Yeah, but I was mailing a painting to somebody who bought it, and this guy in the mail store, you can see how it's probably better I'm alone. I'm so easily influenced by people's words, but this guy in the mail store goes, doing a painting, and he goes, can I see it? And I was like, I don't feel safe. This does not seem like a safe environment to show him the painting. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, it's just something. And I'm like, say I didn't do it. Like, just be like, oh, it's my friend. She's in a hospital. Oh, here it is. but I showed him to it, and he goes, oh, yeah. He goes, a lot of Basquiat. He goes, that's always people when they first start painting. Boy, you always got to do the old Basquiat. Like, he was mocking the idea that that's all you beginner painters. And I had a moment of like, I bet this guy wishes he was a painter, and he's taking out his frustration on me because he's not able to have – anyway. So Yes, I do love Basquiat, and I saw that influence too in Noel's work. Yeah. My co-star, mm-hmm. after you bring me out, and then I'm going to do that solo show, and then we're going to get that those surgeries
to look the same.
Right.
So the other question we ask is, what is your favorite color and why, Lauren?
Oh, I wish I would have done a workshop on this, so I really would know the truth. My favorite color. My son's always asking me this, and I'm like, I don't know. What's it matter? Here's $5. I guess my favorite color is like a orange. Like
that's Rob's favorite color.
Orange.
Like a burnt?
A bit. It really depends. I can't, again, I'm not, it's but not the super, super, not the like sort of IKEA orange, right?
Right.
Mm. But yeah, I think more of a reddish, you're right, reddish orange perhaps, but I do love that.
Why orange? What does it make you feel?
I think it's just a live color. It just feels really like a real, it feels, the energy to it is really high, I guess.
Totally, yeah. Seems like I think it's the most like vibrant color there is. It's such a great color. It's like energized,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes. And that's what I was, yes. And I like red too, but it's you know, within reason. I'm not insane. does anybody say like, have you had anybody like black?
Yeah.
Yes, we've had a few people say that.
Like black.
And a few really obscure ones where you don't actually know what the color is they're talking about, where it's like, what is that even a color? Like, how do you know the name?
Do you pretend that you know, or do you go like,
we're all just like,
that?
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, I know that color.
Yeah, I love that color.
I've got a shirt in that color.
I love it. Yeah.
Melimbala. I love Melimbala. I was at a kids party yesterday, and this woman, everyone's like trying to find things to talk about with this, you know, these people that you're not really friends with, but your kids are friends with. And somebody had a conversation started that I was so excited about, but it didn't go anywhere because no one, you know, kicked the ball back to her. But she was like, you guys, you know that they announced the new color. There's some organization that comes up with colors.
Pantone.
Color titles.
Pantone
or color.
Yes.
Yes. She goes, the Pantone has announced the new color, and the color is period. And it's a red, like a deep red. It looks like period blood. And listen, I love that kind of, I was just like, oh yes.
Oh, wow.
I was like, period blood. And I thought that was awesome. And everyone was like, oh, it, you know what? I noticed that that area has got the grass is growing over there. Like, people immediately were like, nope, we're not talking about this color of period. And I was like, I think that's really awesome.
Yeah.
And
next, like, diarrhea. Have you heard about diarrhea?
I'd like to know what the color of like chlamydia is or something when I release that.
Oh,
chlamydia.
Oh, that is period. Legendary.
All right, so what? So people are going to go to @thisoneistitle, and they're going to go to @LaurenWeedman on Instagram. But what should, if one thing that you would love people to see you in, or to look at, or to learn about you, what would that be?
To be honest, right now, that's the art thing would be so fun, because I do tend to just the same people keep, you know, buying it and seeing it, and that would be fun if it was like to a wider audience, could be fun. So I think just that, and I'll, when I have my show and stuff, when I do the Zoom show, I will be announcing that on Instagram.
Amazing.
So I think that's the best way.
Amazing.
Feel that kind
awesome.
Of stuff.
Amazing. Well, we
just
will
come
be
over,
sharing.
I guess they could come over.
Yeah, we're going to be sharing away, and then so if your paintings are all $200 each, but then after talk art, hopefully we can raise you up a little
about
bit.
$250.
$250 each. But this has just been the best talking to you. Oh my God, so good
and
to catch up
for
with
everyone
you.
Listening. We're going to post images on our Instagram of Lauren Weedman's paintings, and you can visit @thisoneistitled on Instagram, and you'll be able to see the incredible many faces that have been created during lockdown and onwards. And I love them. And we need to get one. We need to get
guys.
One each. We're gonna put in our
we're
orders.
Gonna invest.
We're gonna DM you.
Oh yeah.
with our
definitely
orders.
Need to adjust those prices. Yeah. it'd be amazing. I act like I'm like, oh, I don't care about money, and the first time I talk to you off of here, I'm just like, they actually are 17,000. I didn't want to say that on the air. I didn't want people to think, but yeah, thank you so much, Russell. Yeah, thank you.
So good.
You guys, thank you so much. I was so looking for, thank you for doing this podcast as well.
Oh, it's been so lovely.
I love it. I love you guys.
We love you.
Thank you.
And hopefully we get to see each other in real life. Yeah. Like,
That'd be amazing.
We got to sort it out, and I'm going to mention that to Noel. We're going to have to link that up as well.
Big time.
But thank you so much.
Please.
Thanks Lots everyone for listening.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back very soon.
Bye.
You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamond and Russell Tovey.
Follow us on Instagram at Talk Art, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in today's episode, with music by Jack Northover.
Subscribe to Talk Art at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever it is that you get your podcasts.
Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.